This is a recording of the audit hearing held by the Federal Election Commission on June 27th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
For the Washington State Republican Party, as you know, committees who are being audited have an opportunity to appear before the commission prior to the adoption of the final audit report. And the Washington State Republican Committee requested such hearing. So here we are today with Mr. Dave Mason representing the committee. Thank you for coming and welcome back to the commission.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. General Counsel, Staff Director. First of all, we appreciate the opportunity to present this issue to the commission. And I also want to take a minute to thank the audit staff for their professionalism and courtesy throughout this process. It's never fun being the subject of a government inquiry, and you made it no more painful than was necessary, so we appreciate that. We are addressing only one issue in the audit findings to the commission at this point, and in summary, we believe that the circumstance of a simple payment error out of the wrong account between the federal and non-federal accounts is a situation that is not contemplated by the statute or the regulations. We believe that some accommodation or some arrangement is essential to deal with circumstances of that sort. And if I understand, I believe the audit division agrees with that. May have a different view about what is the appropriate remedy or action. We believe the audit position is inadequate in circumstances outside of the audit, and I'll go into that a little bit more. I think the commission itself has not always followed an every transaction rule in reporting for the federal account. And we believe that non-reporting of transactions that are erroneously made and corrected in the same period is consistent with the statute and especially with its disclosure objectives, and in fact might present a better picture of federal activity and non-federal activity than entering both transactions. On the non-contemplation, I think the audit staff says there's no provision for erroneous payments, and we agree. Errors, however, do occur. All of you who've been involved with campaigns understand, particularly in the fall of an election year, things are moving quickly. Vendors want payment in advance. There are often long communication chains. There are consultants out there who you're dealing with, media buyers and other people like that. In order to hurry up and get this paid so the campaign, or the party in this case, can get on with its business. And occasionally that's going to produce payments out of the wrong account. The fact that this came up in a couple of prior audits, in the Arkansas Democratic Party and the Orange County audit, I think is just sort of the tip of the iceberg in terms of how often this probably happens in reality out in the field. I guess I want to address that there's also no provision in the statute of the regulations that I'm aware of for a remedial transfer from the non-federal account in this circumstance. And if I understand the audit division's position, they're not questioning that transfer back of the $43,000 in this instance. In other words, there's an erroneous payment made from the federal account and a transfer from the non-federal account. But if you look at the allocation regs and the transfer regs, that is an impermissible transfer from the non-federal account to the federal account. And in that context, I think looking at it and saying, well, we have a reporting violation, but we're not going to address the arguably impermissible funds flowing into the federal account is to strain at the gnat and swallow the camel, if you will. And in particular, this leaves committees without a remedy outside of the audit context. If the committee had, in the fall of 2010, reported this disbursement out of the federal account and then reported the non-federal transfer, I am almost certain that we would have gotten a letter from RAD telling us that we had transferred excessive non-federal funds into the federal account and to please transfer them back. And so in that sense, certainly some remedy is required for this type of situation, whether it's on the reporting side or on the RAD side. I think in my view, probably both would be appropriate. There are a number of analogous situations in accounting where journal entries are allowed for transactions of this sort, where they don't need to be reported in the ultimate financial results. I mentioned in the submission, in terms of the commission itself not following an every transaction rule, that in the campaign guide for party committees, there are instructions that if a check is presented to the bank and bounces in the same period, the committee doesn't need to report it. And by analogy, this is the same sort of treatment that I'm recommending here, that if an erroneous payment is made and corrected within the same period, it need not be reported. In terms of the statutory objectives and fit, while it's very difficult to go back 30 years and say what would Congress have done, this is one area where I'm fairly confident in saying if any of the people involved had been asked, well, what happens if someone makes an erroneous payment, they would have said, well, yes, we need to arrange something for that. They may well have had a vigorous debate about what that something should be, but that is precisely the case where it's left to the commission to craft a remedy in a situation that the statute didn't explicitly contemplate. But I think Congress would not have wanted to lock committees into a position where if they made an error in payment, there was no way to unring the bell, as it were. I believe that allowing committees to exclude these transactions from the reports, in fact, promotes a better picture of the balance of federal and non-federal activity. In the context of a state party committee, all the non-federal activity is going to be reported to various state commissions on state reports and the federal activity here. And so the effect of reporting this disbursement out of the federal account and the transfer back from the non-federal account is to simply swell the party's apparent disbursements by $46,000 simply by virtue of this payment and transfer back. And so I don't think that reporting gives a particularly helpful picture to the public of the federal activity that's occurring. Finally, I believe that a rule allowing in-period exclusion from reports would encourage early examination and rectification. In other words, if committees understand that if they find errors within the period and correct them, they can exclude them from reports without consequence, and they're going to be encouraged to go ahead and make these examinations at a regular period, rather than waiting to the end of the period and doing the bank reconciliation. So that concludes my presentation. Again, I thank you for entertaining us, and I'm open for any of your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mason. Any questions, comments? Commissioner McGann?
First, thanks for coming in. It's always good to hear directly from folks who have to live with all this wonderful prose. Couple points before I get to the question. I hear you on the idea that the audit report, maybe as currently written, looks like you made two mistakes when really it comes down to one mistake. And I certainly wouldn't have a problem with making it more clear, depending how the predicate question goes, assuming that the finding stays, making it more clear that this is not a typical situation where a party committee just didn't report something, that actually the money moved, it was a mistake, you fixed it quickly. You know, I'm not one that likes to have people unnecessarily branded as breaking laws when they really didn't intentionally do it, and this was a, as you said, it's not quite a happens all the time, but in the rough and tumble of campaigns, it's certainly understandable. The question I have, though, comes down to the statute, which does say that, at least the way I read it, money going in and out of the account, and I'm not quoting the statute, but the concept is it needs to be reported. Now, the example of bounced checks is a little bit different because the check never really hits the bank because it doesn't clear. So I can see why that doesn't get reported. But that's not the case here. The money actually, the transaction happened. Now, why is that under the Act not a reportable event? My concern is although I certainly pride myself on being rather flexible. I try not to simply ignore the act unnecessarily. So help me not ignore the act.
Sure. Again, I think this is an issue where the act simply doesn't address it. You can certainly read the act and the regulations, for instance, on the itemization, say each transaction. And you can certainly read it in a way that says every, you know, everything in and out has to be reported. As I've suggested, I don't think that presents a particularly accurate picture of federal account activity. And so it moves to a question of what's the objective of the reporting. And if the objective of the reporting is nothing other than an every account transaction, then we might as well just attach the bank statement to the report. It would save a lot of time if we could do that.
Let's not give anyone any ideas. I hear you.
And so as I suggested, I think it's the circumstance that there is no remedy in the statute for this. In other words, there's no way to transfer money back from the state account to the federal account that really drives home the point that one way or the other, either on the reporting side or on the transfer side, you sort of have to have a remedy in a circumstance if we concede that the statute wasn't intended to lock people into a mistake if they simply made a payment error, a payment out of the wrong account.
To the point that your proposal actually will paint a more accurate picture in the eyes of those few people who actually read these reports, I'm not sure that's necessarily true, because you still have transactions that maybe the public wants to know about, even if, you know, it's unfortunate that if it made a mistake, but isn't that something that is kind of part of filing reports and letting people know what's coming in and out of the account? Two, I'm not sure I can get to the point to say that really Congress didn't contemplate this, or this really isn't something that the Act already answers, because after all, FICA was concocted to address a previous situation where you had a number of unauthorized accounts and money spread out everywhere. And the idea was to put everything in one bank account with one treasurer under oath filing a report with a federal agency to keep track of all the money in and out. Because, well, if people could simply sort of have money come in and out within a reporting period and not report it because it was a mistake, hush money could be a mistake. Embezzled funds could be a mistake, right? I mean, and my concern is that if we start messing with the concept of not bounced checks and the like, but money actually, we all agree that the money changed, you know, moved here, that we are undoing a core provision of FICA that I think Congress didn't. Now, they may not have intended to impose a penalty on this situation. They may not have intended to force you to not be able to transfer the money back. I'm with you on all that. But to me, a lot of these arguments seem to be more not necessarily geared toward the rule of law, but how we actually deal with this situation. And I'm certainly cognizant of all the concerns you've raised and very sympathetic. I don't think we should treat this case as a routine case where someone simply failed to report something and put it on some, you know, penalty chart and whack. I don't think that's the remedy here. The question is, is this enough for an audit finding? And in the world of audits, it seems to me that they look at the account, money in, money out. The report should match that. And in this case, it doesn't. Help me get over that hump.
Sure.
Now, you don't get to come in and talk in executive session if this gets referred to Merland. And I understand, you know, this is a good opportunity now to have that discussion without having that discussion. But the predicate discussion, should we have an audit finding? Mm-hmm. I've always seen that as a different issue than whether or not there's a MER and a penalty and whether you can do amendments. They're not necessarily, in my mind, the same thing. At times in the Commission's history, they've all been the same thing. Once there's an audit finding, sort of the assembly line just grinds you. But that's not how I see it. So help me get back to the statute here where you have money moving in and out of an account and why that's not reportable.
Okay. I guess I would start with what I understand the purpose of the public reporting to be, which is to be disclosure to the public of the committee's activity. and I would distinguish that from the record-keeping requirements. And so that's why I take the position that for public reporting purposes, if anything is seen, it is how much money did the committee raise and how much did it spend. And so in that context, having a transaction of this sort sort of lumped into the federal account inflates the federal account by more than it actually does. And so that's why I think on the public reporting side, there's a good argument that the objectives of the statute aren't promoted by reporting this kind of a transaction. On the record-keeping side, absolutely, you know, the committee's going to have records to support all the items and to show this. And again, you know, the commission is doesn't follow GAAP in every respect, but I know looks at it frequently as a model or the government analogy. And there are a number of situations in accounting where journal entries are appropriate, and sort of, you know, you end up with offsetting entries inside the accounting that's not necessarily reported at the end. Now, this is the commission statute and reporting regime to enforce, but I don't think it's necessarily inconsistent with reporting practice in general to exclude offsetting transactions within a single accounting period.
Any other questions or comments? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hi, Dave. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
I just want to make sure I am clear on the relief that is being requested. So as a factual matter, originally this transaction wasn't reported. As a result of the audit, amendments have been filed, so now it has been reported. I take it, I mean, you sound like you're saying you shouldn't have had to file the amendments, but I take it you're not suggesting that you should now file another set of amendments to sort of unamend what you've already amended, right?
No, we're not.
And so I think, if I can interrupt for a second, and just so you know what I'm asking, so I think what I'm hearing is sort of an, okay, we've amended the reports. You want us to amend, we'll amend, but we don't think this merits a finding in the final audit report at the end of the day. Is that am I hearing that correctly?
At this point, that is our position, and I want to explain a little bit that the committee is a little bit in a box when we get the audit report, because you know, one of the objectives coming out of that is we want that materially complied result out of the end of it. And so in order to get that, we had to go ahead and make this amendment, though at the appropriate point we brought it up, and then now have an opportunity to present it to the commission. So at this point, yes, the request is to exclude this amount from the finding, but if you follow the logic, it would be that we shouldn't have had to file the amendment. But you know, to file an audit amendment at this point is not a major issue, and we were happy to do that.
Okay, thanks.
Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great to see you, Dave.
Thank you.
On a couple of issues, though, suppose a couple hundred thousand had gone into the candidate's personal account.
Well, in this case, it's not a candidate committee, but...
We know that, but what we're looking at is the issue of whether or not... A mistake can be rectified within the reporting period.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it comes down to.
And sorry, and so your hypothetical is what?
Hypothetical is here it, you know, went into the non-federal account and it came out of the non-federal account. But what if it went to somebody's, it was a large amount of money, went into somebody's personal account. What would we do then? Say, well, they got it back.
You mean so that there was a transfer from a candidate's account to the campaign or something of that nature?
Well, suppose it went to the, you know, from the, out of the campaign federal account, someplace unrelated to any other campaign, just went to somebody's personal account and then came back. I mean, when do we draw the line? I think it's a concern to me.
Well, I think in the context of an audit, that might well become a factual question. In this case, I think it's fairly clear from the vendor records and the subsequent activities that this was a simple payment mistake.
Well, I think the hard part here is trying for us to have to divine the intent behind each one of these instances. Is it, was it a mistake? Was it not a mistake? When you have situations where people may say, this is easy money for 30 days, we can get it back, you know, and then where do we find ourselves in an audit? And they said, well, we knew we could get it back, so we did.
Mm-hmm. Well, if for instance,
and
it had made
sure
a difference.
Then we're into an intent issue,
yeah,
and those are hard to prove.
Yeah, I think if it had made the difference between the account being solvent or not, then you would have evidence that it wasn't a mistake.
So we would have to go into somebody's personal bank account and go through that issue to see if the money was always in there?
Oh, in terms of a personal bank account?
Well, I mean, how else would you be able to prove that the money didn't go somewhere it shouldn't have gone?
Yes, I think the commission has been there before.
Yeah.
I mean, that would also be a potential personal use issue in the case of an authorized committee.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me just start off by saying that I agree with Commissioner McGann that I too am very sympathetic with the situation that's presented here, that I think it is a no harm, no foul sort of situation where there was an erroneous payment made. And then the question becomes, to me at least, is at what point in this process should we take this into account? Is the audit, when we're trying to determine clean questions of law in the audit process, is this the more appropriate setting in which to determine what to do here, or would it, if there were a referral to enforcement? And I'll just state that I think that in the enforcement context, we have a lot more flexibility to say that we just don't think that this transaction, it does appear to be erroneous. The facts don't indicate that there's a problem here. It shouldn't be subject to a civil penalty. But is the audit context the better place to consider this sort of circumstance, or is the enforcement process actually the better context? Because I just following up on what Commissioner Walther brought up, he brings up some scenarios where if we crafted a rule that you propose, that if there is an erroneous payment made that's rectified within a reporting period, then that wouldn't have to be reported. And I think we could all conjure up some scenarios where some mischief could be made. You know, what if there was a federal account that was running low on funds and they really wanted to make an ad buy? They were having a fundraiser later in the reporting period, so they saw the prospect of money coming in, and so they decided, well, let's pay for that out of the non-federal account, and then we'll make everything whole. Since in many cases, you know, relatively speaking, very few committees get audited. Since that would never have to be reported in the first instance, you could start to see maybe a little bit of mischief that could arise if this became the new reporting rule. So, so that's kind of two questions. Is there, starting with the second one first, is there a way that we could craft a rule that would be tight enough that would that would prevent the possibility of mischief? And two, is the audit, would this be, the facts of this particular matter be better handled later in the process, or is the audit process the appropriate context to consider these sorts of facts?
Sure. Thank you. Well, on the prevention of mischief, I think you actually hit the nail on the head in terms of the transactions that you are most concerned about aren't going to be reported anyway, no matter what the rule is. I mean, if someone is intent on, a substantive violation of the statute, of spending money that they know is not legal and trying to hide it, they are not going to report it to you under any circumstance and under any rule. And so proposal would allow people who are otherwise intending and attempting to comply with the rules and substantively are doing so to be able to address that kind of situation. In terms of where to address this, I'm very hopeful that this won't have to go any further. But if it does, certainly the Commission has flexibility to address in other contexts. Because this situation had come up with other committees and was incorporated in audit findings, And I understand how that works. The committee didn't object, and it came on up and went on through. But because I'd seen the situation occur a number of other times, and it was fairly sizable, I thought it was useful to address it in this context.
Any other questions or comments from commissioners? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment on what you just said about how people won't report the things that are really mischievous or ill-intended, and we're only catching the innocent and inadvertent mistakes. I mean, as you know, a lot of the business that we do here concerns innocent mistakes. Most of the business that we do here concerns innocent mistakes. We're just trying to make sure that at the end of the day, the public record is accurate. And in the enforcement context, you know, that's, I think, you know, this has been alluded to by several people, that may be the place to take into account, you know, whether it's an innocent mistake or perhaps something that looks to have been designed to hide some other activity. But as you know, sometimes the reporting violation is all we actually can get done at the end of the day. Even when something, we sense that something else may have been going on, something a little bit more ill-intended, it's that reporting violation that becomes the hook. And that's the thing that's easy to prove. And that's not only the case for us, but also for justice sometimes when, you know, they see things that they think may well be knowing and willful violations of the law and perhaps trying to obscure some real ill-intended bad conduct. Sometimes all they have at the end of the day is a reporting violation. And I think that actually is a valuable, preserving those violations as reporting violations actually does serve a valid enforcement interest. Again, the individual facts of an individual case, that's something that the commission is free to consider when we decide whether to go forward. So I think in some sense, you know, you're reaching a sympathetic audience and you're hearing that for that later decision point, should it come up, not that it would be appropriate to actually get into the details of that in an open hearing, but I would be wary of eliminating the possibility of having that hook for other perhaps less well-intentioned and less inadvertent conduct.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the expressions of sympathy in a potential situation should that occur. Again, I don't think this would change the situation in terms of being able to discover an ill-intentioned violation, and I don't think it likely that an in-period rule would create a big problem for, again, a substantive violation. I mean, yes, I could conjure a situation in which somebody wanted the money for a couple of weeks or something like that, but that almost by definition is not going to be one of these serious situations that you're talking about. In other words, an embezzlement that only lasts for 2 weeks, yeah, I would not want that to happen, and I would want to be able to catch it, and I think you still could. But I think something that you would be concerned about that would be serious of the type that you're talking about is almost certainly going to involve reporting violations that extend over more than one reporting period.
Any other questions or comments? Commissioner McGann?
One final question on remedy. Point you made, I think, in the opening. Let's say, well, it's not really hypothetical, it's facts of this case, but let's say for the sake of argument, you have a state party that meant to move money out of its non-federal account but accidentally took it out of the federal account. And I think I heard you say that you're basically stuck. There's nothing that really guides you on what you're supposed to now do. I would think you would make the proper account whole, do amendments, and, well, hope Rad isn't particularly aggressive that day. You talk your way out of it later, I would think would be, but you would just fix it. Are you saying that the rules really don't allow that? Does the commission need to think about putting more guidance in for these sorts of mistakes? I mean, that's sort of part of cabining this into a legitimate mistake as opposed to the boogeymen that various that have been thrown out, myself included, embezzlement and things. That's not the issue here. Are people really stuck if they make a mistake? They don't know what to do to fix it?
In terms of don't know what to do, I'm not sure about that. There's certainly no specific guidance that I'm aware of that tells a committee what to do in that circumstance. But in terms of stuck, yes, as I see it, by the commission's regulations and by RAD practices, which follow the regs, this isn't something where they're sort of off on their own, there are specified reasons for which you can transfer funds from a non-federal account to a federal account to address allocable expenses under very detailed rules. And 100% non-federal expenses do not fall into any of the categories for which a transfer is permitted.
Which is why it ends up looking like a double count, because when you move it back, you don't have permission to move it back, and that looks freestanding violation. It's not. It's part of the corrective action. It's
exactly,
one mistake, not two.
But what's more difficult for the committee in a circumstance like this is that if the committee were to report the disbursement from the federal account and a transfer from the non-federal account, depending on the dollar value, but in this case it almost certainly would have crossed the threshold, where RAD would have said, well, you've now transferred excessive non-federal dollars into your federal account.
Right.
And that would generate an RFAI, and the committee would respond and say, well, it was a mistake, and RAD would probably send that over to ADR or assign an audit point or whatever was the remedy under the referral procedures, because there simply is no procedure for corrective transfers. And so if you're not going to allow relief in the reporting side, then I do think you need to contemplate some situation where you could come in and make an explanation of that sort and be allowed, in the ongoing process. Because, again, here in the audit, the auditors see it and everything's wrapped up in one package. But prospectively, if we were doing that this month on a report, the regulations, again, don't allow that kind of transfer.
It seems to me the more sophisticated the player, the more likely it is they may call the RAD analyst and say, here's what we're going to do, how to report it. They may do memo text. They may know all those tricks that, I know, folks who've been here know. But someone who doesn't have the benefit of you and trying to do it on their own may get caught up in the morass, and that's part of why we put in this procedure that if you think there's a legal question there with RAD, you can bring it right to the commission, because as a commissioner, there's not a lot of ways to police this. But it seems to me that if you'd ask RAD, they'd say, oh, no, we could, if you explain what you're doing, we wouldn't double-jam you. But unless you know...
My experience with RAD is different than that, and and my experience with RAD is overwhelmingly good, both when I was on the commission and since. But they have proposed and you have approved certain standards and thresholds, which were released to the public recently, and I think that was actually helpful. So it's certainly helpful in me explaining to my clients, what's going to happen at certain stages.
Now everyone knows there's 30 standards.
Typically, the response from RAD when we have an error of this sort is, yes, it is helpful to explain it, and it's usually helpful to call in advance, and sometimes they have suggestions about, particular ways or whatever. But if this crosses a threshold, because in this case it's going to be an impermissible transfer, otherwise impermissible transfer from the non-federal account to the federal account, then that's going to be addressed, in those review thresholds.
Right.
And RAD feels like, and I think it's the case, that they have very little room for judgment there. Furthermore, if the commission is going to arrange a procedure of that sort, obviously you would want to go ahead and put it in the RAD procedures, and to the extent it was useful to have it be made public so that committees who were in that circumstance could address it without having to come all the way here.
Right, right, which is why we put in the thing if you think it's the situation you're describing, you can kick it right to the commission, and then we don't let the audit points build and then go through an audit on something that maybe could have been resolved, sometime ago. But I was just curious, like, what else we could do to help folks comply.
I think something in the RAD process that okay. either gave them flexibility or set up a procedure for a submission of the sort would be the alternate remedy.
Right. When you make a mistake, here's what you're supposed to tell RAD, and RAD will then have this, either it goes to the commission and some other track, or there's something that doesn't treat it as if you've intentionally hid money. And that's really the concern, right? Treating your innocent mistake as if it's the same as something short of knowing and willful, but still something where it wasn't just one mistake. There was something else that caused it.
More material than the reporting mistake is the issue of the apparent excessive non-federal transfer. Because right. that's treated as a fairly serious issue in the RAD process, and so that's what you would need to have a way to address.
I got it.
Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to ask the staff about the comment made by Mr. Mason. I was going to call him Commissioner Mason, that there was no reference to an impermissible transfer on the return. And I suppose that's remedial in terms of part of the transaction, but...
Right. I mean, our review process is a little bit different than the RAD process as far as how we look at the funding from the non-federal account. We take a more global approach.
What does that mean?
I'm not so sure we can get into too much detail, but...
I don't want to interrupt, but if I could... Without getting into too much... RAD just looks at the face of the report. You actually get to see the records.
Correct.
There's no secret. So when you see the records, that's more global than just looking at the face of the report. You know the backstory as to why the transfer happened, which is what you mean by global.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, Mr. Mason's been indicating that, perhaps you have a different point of view or more of a view akin to how to deal with the situation. So if you didn't call it an impermissible transfer, because you have the facts, then should we worry about reporting the in and out?
To us, I mean it's a reportable transaction, and that's why it appeared in the misstatement finding. Beyond that, we did the normal course of reviews to look at the funding to see whether or not there was a material issue here, and we did not see it as far as the funding goes.
Just trying to think of a way to see where there could be some movement and not have to catch everybody in the system, but on the other hand, be alert to the situation that I was concerned about is where the money goes out, and it goes out to either maybe you call it a campaign account, or maybe it paid some bills on the non-federal level, and then it gets reimbursed out of the non-federal account, but that's for money that never went in from the federal account. And so then, I can see a bunch of scenarios where we might find ourselves trying to interpret the intent of the statute, but dealing with a whole myriad of different issues. So I was wondering, in view of that comment, do you see any area where there could be some give and not...
An audit? No.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, but discretionary-wise is being used here, and then not, impermissible transfer, so I just...
Right. I think Mr. Mason makes a point as far as, looking into possible areas as to where, if he feels he's boxed in and he can't make a correction to solve a simple mistake, then that's something that could be explored as far as, what RAD would allow as far as... and what is disclosed on the reports as far as correcting that situation.
Thank you.
How about everybody gets one free innocent mistake per report? It's a one dog bite rule. And then we don't have to worry about why they made the mistake. Something to think about. Any other questions or comments? You don't like the free mistake rule? Any questions from the Office of General Counsel or the Staff Director's Office?
We have none. Thank you.
We have no questions.
Okay. Anybody else? Mr. Mason, would you like to say anything before the hearing concludes?
No. I thank the Commission for your attention and for your openness to these arguments.
We really appreciate your coming in. Thank you very much. Hearing is adjourned.